Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of any organization, including One Generation Away.
The freedom of a people to choose its leaders is the root of liberty.
Keep alive this experiment in liberty.
Liberty, in case you've forgotten, is the soul's right to breathe.
Government should be very minimal in protecting liberty.
Peace cannot be purchased at the cost of liberty.
The sturdy ground of liberty.
Liberty once lost is lost forever.
Fight for their liberty and for our security.
Guarantees individual liberty.
This great republic born alone in liberty.
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 Just how much do you want liberty?
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner, cutting through the double talk, taking on the topics, going after what the politicians really mean, and making it all clear for your freedom and your liberty. Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What is Donald Trump up to? Meeting with Democrats who've called him everything from a sexist to a white supremacist. We'll try to read the tea leaves. Welcome back into Liberty Nation, with you again from Sarasota, Florida, this week after surviving Hurricane Irma. And now that congressional Republicans have, in 10 months since the 2016 election, produced nothing, President Trump reaches out to Democrats begging the question of exactly what the president has in mind. Will he abandon the Republicans in Congress, or is he just sending a shot across the bow? Opinions abound on this suddenly critical question, and we'll get a bunch of them from LibertyNation.com editorial director Lisa K. Donner and Jason Russell of the Washington Examiner. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton releases her book on all the reasons she lost the 2016 election. Spoiler alert, she takes almost none of the blame herself. We'll play you some of her most revealing comments on her book tour. And constitutional lawyer and LibertyNation.com legal correspondent Scott Cosenza will jump on board to chew the fat about a Maryland town planning to let illegal aliens vote in local elections, a court ruling on public access to police dash cams, and a reversal of fortune for that Christian Baker who refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple. Well, what a long, strange trip it's been of late for President Donald Trump breaking bread with Democrats. And for those of us who rode out Hurricane Irma here on the west coast of Florida and lived to tell about it, and here to discuss both subjects is the woman who's written a particularly compelling piece about Trump and was by my side as Irma hit land near us here on the west coast of Florida, my truly better half, and editorial director at LibertyNation.com, Lisa K. Donner. And Lisa, we dodged the Irma bullet together here in Sarasota, Florida, now that the PTSD of going through it is starting to subside. Reflect for a moment, if you would, on what it was like in the unforgettable hours and days leading up to Hurricane Irma and the storm itself.
Well, Tim, what a long, strange trip indeed. I was particularly challenged at a soul level because I had just finished a two-day women's retreat, and I was the keynote speaker talking on not allowing circumstances, people, things, and worry to let you lose your joy. And the hurricane really embodied all four of those elements. You had to kind of work around all four circumstances of Irma, the people who got you whipped up, the things that you own and were they going to be destroyed, and then just the sheer worry as to whether you were going to be okay.
And in the end, of course, we were okay, but we didn't know that until the storm actually hit. It had veered off really almost at the last minute and gave us a Category 2 here rather than a Category 4. 85-mile-an-hour winds and drenching rain, but no damage to person or property. All right, let's change subjects here and go to the piece you've written on LibertyNation.com entitled "The Lone Ranger Rides Again," referring to Donald Trump. And there was a question mark at the end of that title. I want to read what you wrote at the start of that article and then have you comment on it. Way back when, Donald Trump described himself as a Lone Ranger. Perhaps it's time for the Donald to don his mask, hoist himself onto Silver's back, and ride again. Where to, you may ask? Why, to another political party, of course. Now, what the heck do you mean by this? I mean, third parties have never succeeded in America.
Well, there was that one famous time with Abe Lincoln in 1860, but you're right. I do think Donald Trump is proving himself to be exactly who he said he was, which is a deal maker, a negotiator, a businessman who is able to play one side against the other. And I think that's what you're seeing here. He is going to try to dance with the ones that brung him. But let's remember, there's not exactly a great deal of love between Donald Trump and the establishment Republican Party.
Well, that is an understatement, and he made that clear this week, that the love doesn't go either way. But Trump has put himself in the let me read again what you've written here, that Trump has put himself in the enviable position of having to be negotiated with for fear that he just might walk across the aisle, which he has done recently. And for congressional Republicans, it means they should start taking the president seriously and, heaven forbid, start singing a little Aretha, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Expand on that thought, if you would.
Well, I don't think Republicans in general, and especially the RINOs, Republicans in name only, have really had a lot of respect for Donald Trump. I think they've bought the lie that the media has sold them, that he is a buffoon. Also, I think there is a little bit of jealousy in there. He did what he said he would do, and they said he couldn't do. And here he is sitting in the catbird seat. And I don't think he's going to play around. He's going to do what he can to get what he wants, to do what he said he would.
Well stated. Now, it's been said all along that Donald Trump is not an ideologue. He's not a lifelong or movement conservative, which means he isn't automatically repulsed by Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi the way most all conservatives are. I mean, heck, he used to contribute a lot of money to Schumer's Senate campaigns in New York. But it also means he could make a deal with Democrats on DACA, he may have already, or on health care or even tax reform. Let's talk about DACA first. Do you think he has sold out his base by meeting with Schumer and Pelosi and saying nice things about Dreamers?
Well, the one thing you can be sure of is that Donald Trump says a lot of things, and I'm not sure you can take all of them to the bank. I think DACA is still a work in progress, and we're not sure where that's going to go. But recently on LibertyNation.com, I wrote an article looking at the first 6 points of his contract to make America great again, and he had accomplished 4 of the 6. Now, I think he says what he means and means to do what he says, but some of this is entirely out of his hands, and some of it has to do with Congress, and so far they've shown themselves to be quite feckless.
All right, last question. So what do you think, again with the premise that this president is not an ideologue, does Trump's gambit with the Democrats mean he's about done with Republicans who promise a lot and have delivered nothing? Or is this more a tactical move to get the GOP finally in gear?
Well, I think it's all tactics with Trump. And I do think that he was stung quite badly by that vote from John McCain over the health care. I mean, we were talking about one vote, and there would have been a major victory. So I think he's putting them on notice and letting them know that if they don't dance the way he wants them to, he's going to dance with another couple.
Well stated. Thank you, Lisa. Up right now on LibertyNation.com, monument vandals deem the Star-Spangled Banner racist, and Miss America turns anti-Trump, both by Sarah Cowgill. Truth is making a comeback. LibertyNation.com. And we'll return to talk more politics with Jason Russell of the Washington Examiner in just a moment.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
What we have heard here today has been a political spectacle.
We elect these guys to run the country. They're just not doing their job.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Well, what is the current state of play in the D.C. swamp? We've been discussing the potentially monumental development of Donald Trump starting to break bread with Democrats. Yes, the same Democrats who called him a racist, sexist, misogynist, and now a white supremacist. But putting all that to the side, the president forged a private deal with Democrat congressional leaders Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi on hurricane relief and the debt ceiling and the budget, and met with them again about DACA, the Delayed Action for Childhood Arrivals, action taken by President Obama and reversed by President Trump. So what's next? Health care, tax reform, infrastructure? Joining us to help decode what Trump is trying to do with this outreach is Jason Russell, contributions editor for the Washington Examiner. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. So is the private deal which the president cut with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi on Hurricane Harvey relief and an extension of the debt ceiling and a continuing resolution on the budget, which will keep the government funded for a while, substantially the same or different from the deal he was likely to get from Republican leaders Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan? And if so, why not just make the deal with his fellow Republicans?
Yeah, I think the deal was slightly different than the deal he could have gotten from Republicans, but I think there was a sense of urgency for Trump that he wanted to show that he was getting work done on hurricane relief. He didn't want there to be another kind of Katrina boondoggle, that affected George Bush's presidency. You know, he wanted to make sure that he could take action right away rather than waiting, whether it was going to be a couple weeks or however long, for Republicans to get this through. At the same time, you know, this is only a temporary budget deal. It's not forever. You know, he can still come back later on and, use the budget as a leverage point to get funding for the wall or whatever else he wants to use that leverage for. So I think that was the thinking, was that he wanted to, you know, really focus on hurricane relief and show that he was making progress on that.
All right. Now, the president has been all over the map on DACA, reversing Obama's executive order, then calling for Congress to act, then saying he would act if Congress doesn't, then saying he would take care of the Dreamers, the children brought here illegally, then saying his signature proposal for a border wall would have to be part of the deal. I think both his supporters and critics are confused. Do you think the president is, too?
I think he's probably confused about, you know, what was in that supposed deal that he reached with, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi on this. They said they had a deal, but, you know, we haven't seen any kind of legislation yet or executive order or anything like that that would accompany that kind of deal. So it's one thing to say you reached a deal, but it's another thing to get that deal passed and signed into law. So, it's a lot more complicated than just one simple meeting and saying, oh, okay, we all agree, great.
Well, Trump also invited three Democrats, along with three Republicans, to the White House to discuss tax reform, though the Democrats were all senators running for re-election in states won easily by Trump. Are we thinking Trump believes he can actually garner 60 votes through the normal legislative process in the Senate for tax reform, or that he'll be lucky to get a scaled down version of tax reform through the process called budget reconciliation, which would only require 51 votes, but also has real limits on what can be passed?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. You know, as long as Trump's approval rating stays low, which perhaps, you know, his efforts on Irma and Dreamers will make that rise a little bit, but I don't think substantially it's not going to put him into positive territory. But as long as it's negative, and certainly negative among Democrats, then I don't think we're going to see congressional Democrats, perhaps the ones in red states, but not enough to get to 60 votes. I don't think congressional Democrats are going to work with him on the big issues like Obamacare, like tax reform. You know, those are too significant for them to be seen as basically Trump allies in those efforts. You know, it's still important for those Democrats to make it seem to their voters that they're still, you know, part of the resistance to the Trump, if not in everything, then at least, you know, on these big things where there is such staunch opposition.
We're with Jason Russell of the Washington Examiner. And Jason, you got your ear to the ground in Washington. What are you hearing about conservatives in terms of what do they make of the president's overtures to the Democrats?
Well, you know, a lot of the editorializing and op-eds that I've seen and, you know, the conversations I'm having, I hear that, you know, it's concerning, but it's certainly not the end of the world. You know, they really want to warn Trump from working with, you know, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi on a regular basis. You know, perhaps once this, like I said, that these two instances wouldn't be the end of the world. You know, I think when it comes to things like DACA, you know, that might be something that Republicans don't want to necessarily have to take a stand on. But it's one of those things where, you know, there's a moral side, but then also a practical side. And so it's, if you get that solved without having to take a huge stand on it, that could be very helpful politically. That's similar to what kind of happened with gay marriage a couple of years ago, just being decided by the Supreme Court without having people to take a stand on it. You know, in terms of, you know, are they worried about this? Yes. You know, I don't think it's good necessarily, but I don't think there's a real concern that they think that Trump is going to do this on every single issue. Because, like I said, I don't think the Democrats are going to want to do that either.
All right. So, Jason, how do you view the political landscape for 2018? I mean, neither party is popular. Trump is a total wild card. Democrats are outnumbered by Republicans by more than 40 seats in the House, and they'll be defending a big majority of the 33 seats up in the Senate. Do you think the Democrats at this point have a good chance or a puncher's chance of taking over at least one of the chambers of Congress?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have a puncher's chance. We'll have to wait and see what happens, you know, in the rest of the year, of the next 13 or 14 months or so. But, you know, if Republicans can't get major legislation through, then their, you know, their voters are going to say, well, why would I vote for a party that can't, you know, get any bills passed? You know, what's the point of that? What's the point of electing people that, you know, say they're going to do one thing but can't repeal Obamacare or reform taxes? You know, at the same time, Democrats, you know, face a tough map. That's something that's in the Senate has just, it's a bad cycle for them. In the House, you know, there was the result of the 2010 elections and the gerrymandering that followed. You know, that's a tough map there too, but certainly plausible that either or both could switch to Democrats, but we'll have to wait and see again what happens and what politicians are doing to avoid that fate.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you.
Jason Russell, contributions editor at the Washington Examiner. Up now on LibertyNation.com, Steve Harvey refuses to give in to the left's criticism, and Venezuela and United Nations hypocrisy, both by Jeff Charles. LibertyNation.com. Go there today. Go there the moment the show is over. And we'll be back to hear Hillary Clinton parcel out the blame for her historic defeat in just a moment.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner. This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Say what? Say what? Say what? One more time.
Say what? The portion of Liberty Nation where we treat you to some of the most wacky, astonishing, and damnable things uttered by politicians and the chattering class. And 10 months after one of the most notorious defeats in American political history, Hillary Clinton released her inevitable book about the 2016 presidential election entitled What Happened? It's replete with the expected finger-pointing, recriminations, and blame game. And as she made her way around the interview circuit this week, it's clear that she has convinced herself that the election was stolen by James Comey, by Russians, by sexists, by any number of corrupt actors intent on bringing her down. And implicit in the blame game is her continuing refusal to take responsibility for her own defeat to a degree we really never before witnessed in a losing candidate. She's presented some three dozen reasons why she lost that had nothing to do with her. And her longest interview this week was with Anderson Cooper on CNN. And just to give you an idea where Mr. Cooper was coming from, here's one of his questions.
Because of Russia's role, do you think there should be an asterisk next to President Trump's name in the history books?
Yes, Anderson Cooper actually asked that. An asterisk next to Donald Trump's name in the history books. And Hillary was on the warpath about the Russians.
I'm convinced there was communication. I'm convinced there were meetings and phone calls. I'm convinced that there were financial entanglements. Let's wait to see what it's called. I'm convinced that there was something going on. We know there was a huge amount of content being produced in places like Macedonia. We know that WikiLeaks, which is basically a front now for Putin, was more than willing to publish stolen emails from the DNC, from John Podesta, and that then those emails were weaponized with ridiculous, absurd, untrue stories being churned out, on and on.
So again, with the Macedonian content farms, where seedy Russian conspirators succeeded in influencing the votes of the white working class in the Midwest, apparently. But Russia wasn't even at the top of Hillary's list of evildoers. That distinction belongs to former FBI Director James Comey, who reopened her email investigation 11 days before the election.
I believe, based on a lot of evidence and a lot of assessments by other good analysts, Nate Silver being one, that yes, that was the determinative day because it stopped my momentum. I don't blame voters for wondering what the heck was going on. You have the FBI director saying what he said. And it was a, you know, terrible time to try to break through the last days of a campaign when you had this hanging over my head. And it wasn't really lifted until the Sunday before the election. And you had people early voting, believing that, oh, my gosh, there really is something here. I knew there wasn't. And I knew that it was hard to understand why he didn't just call me and others up and say, hey, can we look at this?
She clings to Nate Silver, the left-wing number-crunching guru who, along with most every other analyst, got the election completely wrong. But Hillary says Comey outed her, but not Donald Trump.
What bothered me the most as the time went on after the election is, and we learned more about the open FBI investigation into the Trump campaign and their connections with Russia. That had been going on for quite some time. The American people didn't know about it. He was specifically asked, why didn't you tell the American people about that investigation? And he said, well, because it was too close to an election. So ask yourself, a closed investigation that ended the prior July, an ongoing investigation into the Trump campaign and Russia, one deserves to be blown out of all proportion, nothing to be found one more time. And the American people don't have the information that there's a legitimate investigation going on about Trump and Russia before they vote.
Of course, Nowhere in there does Hillary acknowledge that it was her own use of a private server and her destruction of phones and extreme measures to erase thousands of emails that caused the whole problem to begin with. And Hillary said all of these forces, not including her, came together at just the right or wrong time to assure her defeat.
I believe, though, it became a perfect storm. Reopening it, which caused people once again to be obsessed with emails, and then Podesta's emails being used to drive all this negative story about me. I think it came together to really kind of make some people queasy. Like, oh my gosh, what if she goes to jail? I heard that so many times. I've talked to reporters who were out there covering the campaign to the very end, and people would say things like, you know, I like her and I think she's done a good job, but what if she's in jail? And, you know, I knew that that was happening, but I thought we would ride it out.
She, of course, did not ride it out. But lest you think she only blames people like Comey and countries like Russia, she also blamed the Constitution, specifically the Electoral College, where she said Trump, quote, squeaked by, when in fact she was beaten decisively.
If you look at our recent history, we've had several candidates, nominees, who have won the popular vote and lost the Electoral College. What does that say? And it says that an anachronism that was designed for another time no longer works. If we've moved toward one person, one vote, that's how we select winners. So I think it needs to be eliminated.
Now, you know, that might tell you as much about Hillary Clinton as anything else, because she lost an election. She wants to change the Constitution, which is not going to happen. Now, here's the truth. Everyone knew the election took place in essentially a dozen battleground states. The rest of the states were out of play. And Trump won 8 of those 12 states. End of story. But now Hillary has, oh so predictably, jumped on the bandwagon, adopting the new language of the left, not just racism, but white supremacy.
When people start engaging in white supremacy talk and they parade as neo-Nazis and they are in the Ku Klux Klan and they are unbridled on the internet with their racist and sexist and other kinds of insulting comments, we need leadership at the highest levels of our government to say that's not acceptable.
Apparently, it was also not acceptable to millions of voters to be labeled as deplorable and irredeemable. The statement defaming millions of people that will live in infamy, which might well have by itself cost her the election. But Anderson Cooper didn't even ask her about that. But before the interview ended, Hillary blamed, yes, sexism, and cloaked it in a warning to future women candidates.
Whoever runs again, probably starting in 2018, will face Russian interference, may face coordination between opposition campaigns and Russians, will face voter suppression, will face endemic sexism and misogyny. When a man is professionally successful, he is seen as more likable. As a woman becomes more professionally successful, she is seen as less likable.
Ah, yes. Likability, a quality rarely associated with Hillary Clinton. So maybe her last statement there actually perversely hit the nail on the head. Through it all, James Comey, the Russians, sexism, the Electoral College, all of it, she remains in a state of deep denial about the rather simple reality that when you add it all up, she lost because the voters just didn't trust her and, yes, didn't like her. On LibertyNation.com, our own Andrew Moran discusses this very subject with an article entitled Clinton's Delusions and the Impact on America. Truth is making a comeback. LibertyNation.com. Quick break, and then Liberty Nation legal correspondent Scott Cosenza joins us to chew the fat about a Maryland town planning to let illegal aliens vote in local elections, a court ruling on public access to police dash cams, and a reversal of fortune for that Christian baker who refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple. Stay right there.
Liberty Nation,
with Tim Donner.
And now we reach the section of Liberty Nation which we entitled Chewing the Fat with constitutional lawyer Scott Cosenza, our old friend and legal correspondent for LibertyNation.com. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing well. Well, you know, one of the basic constitutional rights and privileges and responsibilities of citizenship is voting. And yet in College Park, Maryland, which is about as far to the left as anything east of Oregon, the state of Washington and California, now says they are planning to allow illegal immigrants to vote.
I thought you were going to.
How did this come about?
I thought, Tim, you were going to lead off with the discussion of the constitutional right to travel and how yours has been frustrated recently.
But, well, that's true. Still stuck in Florida after Hurricane Irma. My flight was canceled 5 different times, so I thought I'd drop that in. And I'm still stuck in Florida 6 days beyond when I should have been. But what the heck? No property or personal damage. So what do I have to complain about? All right, back to illegals voting in College Park.
Yes. Well, it's not, just so we're clear on the nomenclature, it's not just illegals. It's also legally situated residents who are non-citizens. So people who have green cards that could be here in college. And for people who don't know, College Park is the location of the University of Maryland's main campus and has many, many thousands of students who now can vote in their election. Yeah, this is a really seldom seen situation. Maryland allows localities to decide for themselves what the qualifications of people who are allowed to vote in their local elections are. So the people of College Park are allowed to decide who gets to vote in elections that are College Park municipal election. These people cannot vote legally in statewide races, and they certainly can't vote in races that are nationwide or in any federal government position. So I have to say, I've never even heard of this being done before. There are a few other places in Maryland that allow it. And at the risk of being a shill for cross promotion, I just recorded the latest Uprising podcast episode with Jim Feit, who wrote about this story for LibertyNation.com. And he talked to me about how San Francisco in 2018 is going to allow non-citizens the right to vote in their school board election. So College Park leading San Fran in the race to the left, I guess. It's surprising. College Park, for those who don't know, is so lefty anyway. It's like I joked to Mr. Feit, did one Republican get one vote and then they just panic and decided to get more Democrat votes in there? I don't know.
Well, I mean, College Park, Maryland is about as far to the left as any place east of the states of Washington, Oregon, and California as you will find anywhere. But what you're saying is, unlike necessarily what the screaming headlines might imply, is that individual communities have the right to decide who can vote for their own municipal town or city election.
You know, like septic tank inspector or whatever, these little local offices that exist. That's exactly right. That's what we're talking about here. That's what's allowed in College Park now.
All right, well, let's move from one left-wing spot to another, although New Jersey, the state of, is not as unrelentingly left-wing as College Park, Maryland, but and here's a story that you wrote on LibertyNation.com. A New Jersey court has decided that the public has the right to view police dash cams. My first question to you would be, what was the precedent for the? Was there anything on the books in terms of whether, were there any court decisions before this, any precedents that citizens could or could not view the contents of police dash cam?
All right, this, Tim, is a New Jersey state case, and it was the Superior Court of New Jersey that made the ruling. And so this case only pertains to people who are in New Jersey. And in that state, there had been no prior ruling either in terms of legislation statewide or judicial ruling that governed these sorts of things. The locality, the prosecutor's office thought they had the legal right to restrict and prohibit the public from accessing this information. And One member of the public, in any case, said absolutely not, and he took him to court, and this is the result. And I think, Tim, that two things I think that we can take away, and I think they're positives, very, very much positives. Number one, we now have the right to access police in New Jersey. The citizens have the right to access police video camera. And the idea that police or the protectors or the prosecutors are better than the citizens and can collect, you know, they take the money from the citizens in the form of confiscatory taxes, and then they monitor them with highly sophisticated electronic devices, and then they would keep that monitoring from the very citizens that they do all that with. That seems to me to be just an impingement on liberty that is beyond the pale. So I think it's a very good decision for liberty in that regard. And even if it went the other way, I think it actually helps move the ball forward if there is some kind of a decision made. So at least then, people like myself who may live in New Jersey and wish to see more exposure of these sorts of government documentation of our lives, we could fight it. But if it's in limbo, you can't really fight it. It's like a marshmallow, right?
Can any citizen in New Jersey just march into their local police station and say, by the way, I'd like to see the dash cam from 3 weeks ago from 3:15 to 3:45 in the afternoon? Or does there have to be a compelling reason?
You'd make a big mistake if you think that courts, when they rule, have to then set up kind of like common sense or easily discernible regulations or laws that we then can govern ourselves by. That's not the case. It is against the law currently in New Jersey to just blanket withhold these tapes by the judgment of the prosecutor. But exactly how the sort of, you know, those form questions that you're asking, that will all have to be developed. And I suspect we'll see more court cases as those things get worked out.
All right, let's move on to another story that got a lot of attention. Really, I think it was a year to 18 months ago where a baker who is a Christian refused to bake a same-sex wedding cake for a gay couple, and it became a cause célèbre on the left and in the LGBT community. But now the Trump administration has sided with the baker who refused to bake that cake. This is quite a switch from the Obama administration.
In 2012, Masterpiece Cake Shop owner Jack Phillips of Lakewood, Colorado, refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple because he does not support same-sex marriage. That's all. That's all. He just declined to do business with these people who wanted to do business with him. Colorado court found that the baker violated an anti-discrimination law, and basically, you know, he has to pay. This is part of the sore winner rash of cases we've seen in the wake of the gay marriage ruling, which is to say that now they have to force and punish every person who thinks that, that there's somehow a religious or moral objection to what they do. It's really the dark side of what I think is a good story of, you know, rights granting in the instance of the marriage case. But the Obama administration, so the Supreme Court had agreed, Tim, in January that it would hear this case on its fall docket, and the Obama administration, you're right, this is an about face, and I think such a welcome about face, Tim. Think of the idea of, you know, I think it was Gary Johnson, the libertarian presidential candidate, was asked this question: if a Jewish baker should be forced to to bake a cake for a neo-Nazi and decorate it with swastikas and such, and he said yes. And I just think that if you think about, you know, forcing a person to make them apply their you know, they're very strenuous efforts and artistic accomplishment and technique to a cause or person that they loathe is really the act of a despot. It's not the act of a free people and a free society. And I think that the Trump administration has really done a great thing for liberty, for coming in. And so what they've done and how the structure of the Supreme Court cases work are, the Supreme Court usually hears from three parties in any given case. They hear from the petitioner who brought the case to the Supreme Court, they hear from the respondent, who is the other party in the case, and then they often hear from the government in the form of the Solicitor General. So what this means is that the Trump administration has directed their Solicitor General to file briefs and argue in court on the side of Mr. Phillips, of Masterpiece Cake Shop, of freedom of expression. And I think it's a great boon for liberty. And let's hope that the current makeup of the Supreme Court agrees as well.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Tim.
Scott Cosenza, legal correspondent at LibertyNation.com. Remember, you can pick up the podcast of this radio show, Liberty Nation Radio, as well as our own podcast, The Uprising, available at LibertyNation.com. And, of course, find podcast providers everywhere. That'll do it for this week, but we'll be back at you next week, same time, same station. Till then, this is Tim Donner saying stand up for liberty, and we'll see you next time on Liberty Nation.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.